morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court, I'm Kevin Chappell. I represent Mr. Wilson in this matter. Under our system of jurisprudence, district courts are encouraged to allow litigants to have their day in court and to have their claim heard before a trier of fact. That right was taken away from Mr. Wilson by the district court under a new and novel approach by considering the Federal Fair Credit Reporting Act as nothing more than a state common law negligence claim, which is to be interpreted under the law of the District of Columbia. The district court substantiated this proposition by citing the case National Telephone Co-op Association v. Exxon, which is a diversity case. Under a diversity case, the substantive law of the jurisdiction where the district court sits is supposed to be used to determine the substantive aspects of the case. However, the district court failed to realize that this particular case is a case being held under a federal question, which is federal law, not state law, is to govern this cause of action. The Supreme Court held as far back as 1943 that when Congress enacts a statute, it is not making that federal act dependent on state law. The district court erred in this respect. If this court endorses a holding of the district court, it would be endorsing the proposition that district courts can interpret federal laws such as the Federal Fair Credit Reporting Act in 50 different ways depending on where that district court sits in the country. Up until this point, neither the district court or CARCO has presented one federal statute, case law, or precedent to support the contention that an expert is required in order to bring a Federal Fair Credit Reporting Act. In a case that's very similar to this case, the Wiggins case, Wiggins, which cited the Stewart case, stated in contents of the summary judgment, a claim under the Fair Credit Reporting Act requires the plaintiff present some evidence which the trier of fact can infer from the consumer reporting agency failed to follow reasonable procedures in preparing the consumer report. All the cases cited by Mr. Wilson in his brief are federal cases interpreting the Fair Credit Reporting Act, and none of those cases required that a party or the plaintiff present.
Was that question litigated in any of those cases?
No, Your Honor. It wasn't litigated, but right. they did put forth propositions in which what a plaintiff had to show in order to have their case go forward. And none of them put forth the proposition that an expert was necessary. As a matter of fact, none of them, except the Coopolis case, even mentioned an expert. And in the Coopolis case, that expert was being used not to determine whether the procedures of the consumer reporting agency was reasonable, but that expert was being used to determine whether a new and novel approach of a violation of the Fair Credit Report should be considered by the court. In that case, the expert was putting forth a proposition that not only the Fair Credit Reporting Act is violated, not only by having a technical inaccuracy, but also if the consumer reporting the consumer report was misleading to its readers. And that was the reason why an expert was used. We hold a proposition that an expert can be used by the plaintiff in order to bolster his case, but the Congress did not require a consumer to bring forth an expert in order to substantiate that case.
If you were right that the district court used state law or DC law precedents inappropriately here, what should we send it back for reconsideration of summary judgment with under the standards without reference to D.C. law? What relief are you seeking, I guess, is the question.
Well, we're asking that you reverse and remand the case back. The summary judgment has already been litigated, and this is the proposition that CARCO used in order to have this case go away. They use District of Columbia law. For reasons I don't understand, the district court went along with it. But CARCO should not have another bite at the apple to.
Well, you want a trial then?
Yes, Your Honor.
The defendant argues that that the 1681 KA strict procedures claim is waived.
Well, Your Honor.
Let me ask you my question.
Okay.
My question is, why do you care? Because the 1681 EB claim is clearly before us, right? You didn't waive that. And isn't the question of expert testimony identical under both?
We do believe that that is the case. However, because there is a higher standard that CARCO must show under K, we believe that the burden for Mr. Wilson is lower under that standard to show a violation.
Okay, but that doesn't relate to anything we have to decide here today, right? That's up to the district court.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And what's wrong, just to go back to my question, what's wrong with just, if you're correct, just sending it back to the district court to reconsider summary judgment if it chooses, or to do whatever else the district court chooses? Isn't the simple holding in your favor just that the district court erred by relying on D.C. law and let the district court sort out what to do next?
Well, Your Honor, we would take that ruling if that's what Your Honor would give us. However, we believe that CARCO argued a specific point, and if we send it back, mm-hmm. you give them another bite at the apple, which is unfair to Mr. Wilson.
I see.
I have a whole lot more time than I thought I would have, but
well, you don't need to use it. You don't have to use
okay.
It. You don't really have to use it. If you have something you want to say, go ahead.
All right. I do want to add this point. The Federal Fair Credit Reporting Act was enacted by Congress for people such as Mr. Wilson. He is a consumer of limited means. The Congress did not intend this act to be a common law negligence claim. If they did, they would simply have spelt that out. If you do that, you will be putting an obstacle in the way of all consumers, such as Mr. Wilson, saying that you have to cross another hurdle in order to bring your claim to defend your rights. That is not what Congress intended by enacting the statute. They wanted consumers to be able to go against a deep-pocketed consumer reporting agency, such as CARCO, and not be hindered because of lack of finances or resources that a consumer reporting agency has. And I ask this court not to place any more obstacles in front of Mr. Wilson.
Thank you.
I can
save your time for rebuttal.
Yes.
Okay.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Jim Steele, and I'm here on behalf of the Appalee CARCO Group. This is a negligence claim. It is a negligence claim under the Fair Credit Reporting Act. The court below properly granted CARCO's motion for summary judgment.
You don't think it arises under the Fair Credit Reporting Act?
Well, Your Honor, the way a brief recap of how this percolated its way through the trial court may help in answering that question. If you look at the complaint has the first count says negligence. And you will not find, not only in count one, you won't find anywhere in the complaint the words Fair Credit Reporting Act. What you will find is in the earlier paragraphs that define who the parties are, there is a statement, I think it's paragraph 8, that CARCO is a consumer reporting agency. And an earlier dispositive motion that I filed on behalf of my client attacked that count on common law negligence grounds, and that was denied. That motion was denied on the basis that this wasn't a common law negligence claim. It was a negligence claim brought under the Fair Credit Reporting Act. The complaint cites
The district court didn't. The district court treated this as arising under the FCRA.
Absolutely, as a negligence claim arising under the Fair Credit Reporting Act. There was also a defamation count earlier, again treated as a defamation count under the FCRA. So it is. There's no question that this is a claim arising under the Fair Credit Reporting Act, but it is a negligence claim, negligent noncompliance.
Okay. Still a federal claim.
Yeah.
Yes. But, and again, if you look at the case law interpreting this specific provision, 1681EB, that we're here today for, you will see that it's it talks about that reasonable procedure aspect of it and how courts will analyze it as being deeply rooted in negligence law.
Well, what do you do with Stewart?
Well, I'll tell you what I would do with Stewart. Stewart's
a case just like this, right? It arose under the federal FCRA.
Yes.
And we said, in certain instances, inaccurate credit reports by themselves can fairly be read as evidencing the absence of reasonable procedures.
That's absolutely correct, Your Honor. And
right,
the way
that's what the opinion says.
Right. But what I'm saying is that I would distinguish that. Uh-huh. I would distinguish what Stewart says, because in Stewart you had a report that had two on its face inconsistent assertions. In this case, you don't have that. In this case, what you have is the plaintiff's, Mr. Wilson's allegations were twofold. One, that the report was not completed in
a
timely
manner.
Well,
you agree that this report was inaccurate, right?
No, I do not agree at all, Your Honor. In fact, that was a hotly disputed issue below that the court never.
Was that because of the use of the word pending?
Exactly, Your Honor. The court did not get to that issue in ruling on this directly. However, it was part and parcel of the ruling that led to summary judgment in CARCO's favor dealt with two aspects, the timeliness aspect and whether the word pending was either inaccurate or misleading. And the court felt that issue alone was enough to show why you would need expert testimony to create a jury question. The difference between Stewart and this one is Stewart.
Do you know, is there any FCRA case decided by any federal court that required expert testimony?
No, Your Honor, I am not aware of any. That doesn't mean that I just don't know that issue has ever come up in any of those cases.
But the district court here relied on D.C. law to impose this expert testimony requirement, right?
Yes, absolutely. However, the court also said, citing that Mr. Wilson in opposing the summary judgment motion cited no federal case law and couldn't put forward a legal reason why the concept of requiring expert testimony was any less necessary under this claim than it would be under a common law negligence
claim. Do you see
claim.
Any thing in the district court's opinion that suggests it was looking just to D.C. law as a model for how to fashion federal law, or was it looking to D.C. law, period? Seems to be the latter.
I would say yes. It does seem to be the latter. I would also say, again, that the legal concept of, interpreting what reasonable procedures might be is not going to be, it's going to be beyond the ken of the layperson sitting in a federal jury box as it would for a layperson sitting in a D.C. Superior Court jury box. The legal argument has equal force in Superior Court and here, that you would need an expert to establish the standard of care, what the reasonable procedures are.
Couldn't that be true in some cases but not others? In other words, you'd sort it out case by case, district courts, some cases. You put in expert testimony here, right?
Absolutely.
And so case by case, but this seems to draw a blanket rule. First of all, it's based on D.C. law, but put that aside, even if this were fashioning federal law, it seems to put a blanket rule in that may not fit the facts in every case.
Well, and that's possible. I would say the ones where it wouldn't be would be akin to, let's say in a medical malpractice case where you amputate the wrong arm. You don't need an expert for that. In some of these cases where there was no dispute that there was inaccurate information contained in the report, but in this case, you don't have that that element. You have a consumer reporting agency doing its job. An expert witness has in fact reviewed it, and that's in the joint appendix at the very end, Mr. Frederick Giles' report. And so, I guess put another way, Judge Kavanaugh, the flip side to that is that there is, in fact, you can look at it either you need expert testimony and Mr. Wilson doesn't have it, or you can look at it whether it's necessary or not. There was unrebutted expert testimony establishing placing the issue of reasonable procedures beyond a jury question. That was an inartful way of putting it, but I would return to the opinion of the court below that for a juror to decide this issue, they would have to understand what a consumer reporting agency does, how they do it, what types of federal restrictions. There are state restrictions as well. And without an expert to guide that juror through that process, it just can't be done. And returning briefly again to the procedural history below, at one point discovery was extended and there was a new expert deadline, and Mr. Wilson in fact did briefly identify an expert and then withdrew that expert. On the heels of that, CARCO did in fact meet its deadline identifying Mr. Giles.
Stewart doesn't really seem to say what you're saying, so tell me again why that doesn't apply here. Because the language in that case says an FCRA plaintiff must only minimally present some evidence from which a trier of fact can infer that a consumer reporting agency failed to follow reasonable procedures.
Well, Your Honor, I would say that the in this case, the minimal evidence is an evidentiary question, but the legal standard of expert testimony, as CARCO is arguing, you need to filter that information through an expert to explain it
But I can see that there might be some circumstances in which it would be hard for a jury to decide whether what the credit agency had done was reasonable, mm-hmm. Because it might be complicated. But here, where the inaccuracy, if it exists, really is just a function of not having used the birth date and the Social Security number as screening. And that, it seems to me, any layperson can understand.
Well, Your Honor, the credit report at issue, which I believe is in the joint appendix, actually has the the birth date and the Social Security number in it. I would suggest that the minimal evidence that Mr. Wilson had put forward is based entirely on this word pending, and another issue that the court below never quite got to.
Wait, are you suggesting that he can't rely on the evidence that Judge Brown just described? Namely, that your client did not delete the obvious names that didn't have a corresponding birthday or Social Security number?
Well, Your Honor, the actual report, the one that's at issue was dated September 3rd. The actual report itself is dated September 6th, and that read clear. The September 3rd report was still, you know, you've got the word pending that indicates that this is still an ongoing process. So they hadn't even gotten to that point yet of winnowing out the information. And that's gone over in the expert report as well. I'm sorry?
Well, you know, I'm looking at what's attached to the letter from Prudential Financial. It's labeled Exhibit 2. And this is what they sent him saying, you know, a copy of the report is enclosed. Mm-hmm. All right? Okay. And there are two. One says investigative report, Oklahoma felony misdemeanor pending with an arrow. The second page of that says Derek Wilson, you know, Oklahoma felony misdemeanor pending. At the top of that, it says a criminal record search for convictions and arrests where prosecution is pending was initiated for addresses as per client specifications. Now, you know, apparently Prudential read this as saying that criminal charges were pending. That's what they attach to this report.
Your Honor, that's not what the record says. The record says, and it's a woman named Ms. Maloney, was the person at Prudential who decided this issue. And she said she did not read that report or rely on it in deciding that her decision to withdraw the offer of employment was based, she was the sole decider, and she based it solely on the fact that she had not received a report by the time she had expected it. So as a matter of causation, there is no evidence that the decision to withdraw the employment was based in whole or in part on anything contained in that report. The only evidence Mr. Wilson has cited, and this is in the brief as well as the materials in the court below, is the two hearsay statements that would not be admissible in any event. One, allegedly a Prudential employee, Mr. Wilson alleges, said that you know, they told us you had criminal charges pending, and that Prudential is not a party to this case anymore. The other one is a deceased former Carco employee who did not have any role in deciding to withdraw the offer of employment. So the only evidence on the record with respect to whether this decision was based in whole or in part on that report is Ms. Maloney's testimony that she did not rely on it at all.
But now your argument on causation is different from the claim that he needed an expert.
Well, it's, Your Honor, that is, my causation argument is more of a response to Mr. Wilson's suggestion that the evidence of the harm or the wrongful act was in the record. I posed to this court, it wasn't in the record. It was brought up in the court below in the context of the summary judgment fight, but again, because the court ruled on the basis of this expert necessity, the court never touched on it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
How much time does Mr. Tappel have?
Tappel has 6 minutes remaining.
Okay.
Just briefly, Your Honors, opposing counsel stated that the defamation claim was brought under the Fair Credit Reporting Act. That's not true. It was brought under a state claim, and it was dismissed from this case under a statute of limitations under D.C. law. Also, the CARCO's counsel also stated that Mr. Wilson originally did cite an expert, which is true, and we did withdraw that expert. And that is one of the reasons, the reason for that is that Mr. Wilson simply couldn't afford that expert. And as a solo practitioner, I couldn't afford that expert. And from my reading of the case law, the expert wasn't necessary. And also from the district court in its memorandum denying CARCO's motion to dismiss at the beginning of this case, it stated its interpretation of the Coropolis case that said that a violation of the Fair Credit Reporting Act is simply if the consumer report is misleading. And we did not believe, and I don't think anyone will hold, that we would need an expert to tell a jury that this is misleading. A jury could figure that out for themselves. And briefly, just touching on the facts of this case, the procedures which we claim is unreasonable is thusly. Prudential retained CARCO to do a background search, and in their agreement, they agreed that they would not use any outside subcontractors. They contravened that agreement and retained a subcontractor. That subcontractor then retained another subcontractor, and neither CARCO nor that subcontractor, Search and Find, knows who this person is. Amazingly, they don't even know this person's name. They've never seen this person. They simply call someone on the telephone and ask them to do a search. And neither CARCO nor the subcontractor has any personal knowledge what this subcontractor did. We contend that they simply went on the internet and got some information and passed it along. And it took them 36 days to do so. Mr. Wilson went to the exact same site. And if you look at the exhibits that the subcontractor did, you will see at some of them, at the bottom, there is pointed out the Oklahoma State Court Network. That's the exact same site Mr. Wilson went to when he found out that his job was being withdrawn. He did that in 15 minutes and sent it on to CARCO. Less than 24 hours later, CARCO then changed its consumer report to be consistent with the results that Mr. Wilson found in 15 minutes. It took CARCO 36 days to do this. According to their agreement with Prudential, this should have been done in less than a week. And if they had simply got Mr. Wilson to do it for them, it would have been done in less than a week. And we contend that an expert is not necessary for a jury to figure out that that procedure is not reasonable and does not rise to the standard of the Fair Credit Reporting Act.
Okay, thank you. Case is submitted.